KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm John O'Brien. Welcome to Speakers Forum. We feature thought-provoking writers, artists, storytellers, and thinkers recorded at events around Seattle. On today's show, the story of a woman helping promote change on a massive scale. In 1996, Jenny Bowen was living in Los Angeles, making independent films. Leading a comfortable, but not very meaningful life, she says. Then one Saturday morning, she and her husband were disturbed by a newspaper photo of a little girl. As you'll hear, that moment led to remarkable changes for Bowen, her family, and an entire culture. But Bowen doesn't think she's remarkable. She thinks almost anyone could do what she's done. Jenny Bowen is the founder of Half the Sky. Her organization works to change how China cares for 1 million orphaned children. Her new book is Wish You Happy Forever, What China's Orphans Taught Me About Moving Mountains. Jenny Bowen spoke at Town Hall Seattle on April 1st, 2014.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. This is the last evening of our first leg, our major leg of the book tour. So we've sort of made our way across the U.S. and for the last 3 weeks, and it's been phenomenal. For me, it's been an incredible experience to be able to actually meet the people who've been supporting our work all these years. Half the Sky, aside from asking you all for money, we don't talk about ourselves all that much in public. The reason for that is that it's been very important for us to give full recognition to the Chinese government for allowing us to create these programs for children, for supporting the programs, and we want them to be proud of what they have done rather than us taking credit for, you know, establishing the programs, the fact that they let them operate, and the fact that they give us kind of free range to do this thing is really extraordinary. Nothing like this has happened anywhere in the world, let alone in China. So because a lot of people for a very long time have supported our work just because they know we're doing something good over there, many people don't know exactly what it is we do. So as a former filmmaker, and my husband still is a filmmaker, we created a very short video. It's about 8 minutes long that kind of tells you what Half the Sky does and why. So I'm going to play that for you now, and then I'll talk.
Humans are complicated creatures. We come in what appears to be an infinite variety of shapes and sizes. We live our days pursuing a limitless assortment of activities, desires, and dreams. Some of us, it seems, have absolutely nothing in common, except what we need to survive. But there's one thing that all of us share, something so fundamental to all humans, so essential, that it separates us from other creatures, the need to love and be loved. So what happens when an infant, a still-developing child, is deprived of that most basic human need? Babies who live without knowing a loving human touch simply fail to thrive. Without hugs and caresses, essential growth hormones are not stimulated. Children deprived of love have smaller brains, weaker bodies, are prone to illness. If such a child survives, then so basic is the need for love that many do not. If such a child survives, she will struggle to learn, struggle to make friends. She may never fall in love, trust another human being, hold a job, strive for a goal. She may never know happiness. Is there any hope for such children, the ones who spend their most critical early months and years languishing alone and forgotten? Can anything be done for children like these? Yes, most definitely yes, something can be done. We learned that in 1997, almost by accident, when my husband Richard and I brought our little daughter Maya home from an orphanage in China. Maya had never known love or what it felt like to matter to another human being. You could see it in her face. There was an emptiness about her. And then, buried deep down an aching hurt. But when she felt the love of family and began to trust that it was hers forever, our little girl blossomed. And when I saw the joy and love of life shining in our Maya's face, I just knew that if loving family-like care could be given to children living in Chinese government welfare institutions, those children would also thrive. And so, along with other adoptive families and new friends I found in China, I created Half the Sky. The journey has certainly not been easy. But we persisted. Today, over 100,000 once-forgotten children have been given a second chance at childhood. Half the Sky is everyday proof that nannies don't need to be biologically related to the children in their care to create the nurturing environment that allows infants and toddlers to develop trust and self-confidence. Proof that carefully trained teachers, mentors, and foster parents can do the same for growing children as their interests, abilities, and social awareness broaden. By any measure, whether quantitative or qualitative, Half the Sky programs offer plenty of evidence that providing orphan children with a warm, stimulating, loving, family-like atmosphere is the next best thing to growing up in one's own family. And you can see it in their faces. Forming an attachment with a child who's never had one is never easy, but is essential for healthy development. It's nature's way of enabling her to go on through life, forging friendships, family bonds, loving adult relationships. When Ai Jing came to us, it was clear that she'd never formed a trusting bond, that magical connection between parent and child we call attachment. She couldn't make eye contact, didn't want to be held. She responded to no one. In the days before Half the Sky's infant nurture program, this might have been the end of Ai Jing's story. Instead, she was assigned her own trained and experienced Half the Sky nanny. Very young children are especially resilient. Within just days, Ai Jing began to emerge from her shell. We can never know what life was like for children before they are brought to us. All too frequently, when they enter the orphanage, they come bearing the scars of trauma. In Xingyi's case, whatever happened left her speechless. Despite normal intelligence, she had only the language abilities of a 6-month-old infant. It impacted every aspect of her development. But in the warmth of a Half the Sky preschool, where highly skilled teachers use an innovative curriculum that combines aspects of the Reggio Emilia approach with the best of Chinese methodology, Xingyi is learning to speak. And she's now happily flourishing in every other way. Most important, she's already learned that she is loved, that her life matters. Is it ever too late to learn that lesson? Older children like Lo Lan often have lived all their years deprived of love. They struggle to figure out who they are, how to live a life. How can such a child find enough confidence to begin to dream of a future? Half the Sky's youth mentors help older children like Lo Lan with their studies, help them to explore special interests, learn new skills. Best of all, Lo Lan's mentor has become her close, trusted friend. Someone who helps her to discover her talents, encourages her to work for what she wants. And so in time, even with older children, the answer becomes clear. It's never too late to learn you are worth loving. No child should ever have to face a life or death situation alone. Little Sufei, abandoned because she had a hole in her heart, will find more than life-saving surgery at Half the Sky. The odds that she'll survive increase dramatically when surrounded by the healing powers of love. Before Half the Sky, orphan children with developmental or physical challenges were destined to spend their childhoods languishing inside institutional walls. Now children like these in a Half the Sky family village, little brother who couldn't walk, big brother who couldn't feed himself, little sister who was too shy to speak in front of others, and big sister who it seemed might never read, each of them now lives in the embrace of what every child needs in order to thrive, the love and support of consistent, caring adults. Today, based on this single, simple principle, Half the Sky partners with the Chinese government, an enlightened foundation, and corporate supporters to help China reimagine its entire child welfare system. Through a landmark initiative, one like no country has ever seen before. We're working together to train every single child welfare worker in China. And today, Half the Sky's new Chinese sister organization, Chunhui Children's Foundation, is beginning to spread its wings, enabling Chinese citizens for the first time to contribute to the welfare of the country's most vulnerable children. We still have a long way to go, but there will come a time, maybe not too many years from now, when Half the Sky's ultimate goal will be reached. We will see a loving adult in the life of every child. That day will come. We always knew it would. But what does it matter? A Chinese philosopher once said, "All the children who are held and loved will know how to love others. Spread these virtues through the world. Nothing more need be done."
Thank you. So in 1996, my husband Richard and I were living a completely different life. I was a screenwriter. I was making my living as a screenwriter. I was an independent filmmaker. He was a cinematographer. And we were living in Los Angeles, had a very comfortable but not particularly meaningful existence. We didn't know, I mean, we didn't feel unhappy or feel frustrated or anything like that. But one Saturday morning, my husband had a late call, and he had the luxury of reading the New York Times. And in that newspaper on that Saturday morning, on the front page of the feature section, was a photograph. Being a cinematographer, photographs always caught his eye. And this was a photograph of a little girl who was dying. We learned for the first time about the many thousands of little girls who were being abandoned in China just because they were little girls. And we learned about the conditions in the welfare institutions, that they were very poor conditions and that the mortality rate was very high. We knew we had to do something. I mean, it just... For some reason, this story, of all the bad news stories in the newspaper, this one just struck us both cold. We just stopped. I said, being a good middle-class American girl, oh, we could send money. Well, who would we send money to? And how could our money possibly help these children? He said, bless him, my husband said, we could bring a child home. So we set out on our adoption journey to save one life, and in doing so, completely changed our lives and happily the lives of many tens of thousands of little children in China.
Jenny Bowen is the founder of Half the Sky, an organization dedicated to enriching the lives of orphaned children in China. Her new book is Wish You Happy Forever: What China's Orphans Taught Me About Moving Mountains. Bowen spoke at Town Hall Seattle on April 1st, 2014. Coming up after a break, she tells the story of meeting her daughter, Maya. For KUOW 94.9 Seattle and Speakers Forum, I'm John O'Brien.
More from Jenny Bowen in a moment. 920, 94.9 KUOW. A proposed federal minimum wage law has been defeated for the time being. Also, nearly 40% of the unemployed have been out of work for 6 months or more. And the U.S. economy slowed significantly in the first quarter of this year. Later tonight, a conversation about conditions for the middle class in the post-recession job market. That's the Diane Rehm Show tonight at midnight. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight, lows in the 50s, mostly clear. Friday highs around 70, sunny in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Support for KUOW comes from Seattle pediatrician Dr. Robert Pretlow, currently recruiting 30 overweight youth ages 10 to 20 to participate in a study of a new smartphone app in a guided weight loss program. More information and qualifying criteria at patientecare.com/study.
KUOW and $3 Bill Cinema present Translations, the Seattle Transgender Film Festival. This four-day event showcases the stories and experiences of the transgender community for people of all genders, May 8th through the 11th. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, you're listening to Speakers Forum. The statistics on orphaned children around the world are sobering. UNICEF estimates nearly 18 million children alive today have lost both parents and are living in orphanages or on the streets. In the U.S., over 400,000 children are living without permanent families. In China, that number is closer to 1 million. And the rate of international adoptions has dropped 50% in the last 10 years. The reasons behind that are complicated. There is a demand, but many regulations hamper interested parents. U.S. families lead the world in adoptions from abroad, but fewer than 9,000 children were adopted in 2012. Our guest Jenny Bowen created a nonprofit organization called Half the Sky to advocate for Chinese orphans. In her new book, Wish You Happy Forever, she chronicles her efforts to help transform Chinese orphanages.
We met our daughter, Maya, a year and a half later. China had been reorganizing its adoption system. And so it took 18 months. I know now it takes years, but then 18 months seemed like a very long time. By then, while we started out to save a child, by then it was like the world's longest pregnancy, and I just wanted my daughter home. But at the same time, you know, life goes on. We had started shooting a movie, which ended up being my last feature film that I directed. We got the call while on location in a beautiful, pristine valley in California, gorgeous, gorgeous setting. Got the call that a little girl was waiting for us in China. And we couldn't leave because we had a cast and crew and investors, and we'd worked years to, you know, get this movie started, and we just couldn't go away. So already parental guilt began, you know, already somebody was waiting for us and we couldn't go there. We got on a plane the day after we wrapped what's called principal photography. Basically, we finished shooting the film. And we flew to China, completely exhausted. It was the 4th of July. My husband's birthday is on the 5th. And he missed his birthday. You know, if you've flown to China, you'd lose a day. So he missed his birthday. That didn't matter. That was okay. On the 7th of July, Maya was put into my arms. And I remember the feeling as if it were moments ago. That feeling of somebody else's child, the foreignness, and yet I knew with every cell in my body that this was my daughter. And we got her back to the hotel, and we just started seeing these, you know, she was beautiful. She had sores all over her face, and she had one of those malnourished pot bellies and little skinny arms, and she was just, you know, a physical, she wasn't in great shape, but, you know, I loved her immediately. I just knew this is my daughter. She had kind of every parasite in the alphabet. She had amoebic dysentery, bloody diarrhea, worms. The pediatrician later said she wouldn't have survived a year. But the scariest thing was that she was like emotionally just vacant. We could live with the fact that she had all this all these medical issues, and that at 2 years old, she couldn't walk, she had no language, all that stuff. I felt like we can get past it. But I didn't know how to love her, because she didn't know how to accept affection. She had never been loved. And we got her back home and moved the editing room to our house so I could cut the film with Maya on my lap. And for the next 6 months, while I was editing the movie, Maya sat on my lap, and I talked to her and played with her and sang to her and was kind of in her face every waking moment. Her first words were dialogue from my movie. I didn't care what she said. I was so thrilled. My little girl was talking. But it didn't totally come into focus for me until a year after the adoption. It was the 4th of July again. We decided to have a birthday party for my husband, who'd missed the last one, and an adoption party to celebrate Maya's 1 year with her family, and to celebrate the fact that the movie was finished and in the hands of a distributor. Lots of reasons to celebrate. So we had a big party at our house, and lots of friends over, and I was in the kitchen loading up platters of food. And I looked out my kitchen window, and maybe it was because I was a filmmaker and I had been forever, you know, looking through rectangles of glass. I looked through the window, through that rectangle, and suddenly everything came into focus for me. Because there was my little girl out in the garden, singing, playing with her friends, so full of joy and happiness, romping around, looking totally normal and looking like a child who had been adored from the moment she was born. And I just said to my husband, wow, that was so easy. Why can't we just do that for all the kids we can't bring home? So that was the beginning of Half the Sky. My husband says, I don't remember saying this, he says, I know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. Honestly, don't know that I said that, but it proved true, and that's what I've done with the rest of my life. So I just reached out to everybody I knew who knew anything about China, anybody who knew anything about child development. I just sort of spread out the widest possible net. I didn't know anything. I'd been to China once before, and that was to adopt. I had never even contemplated starting a nonprofit organization. I only knew about child development what parents knew. I didn't know anything more than that. I knew nothing about theory. I didn't speak a word of Chinese. I'd never dealt with a government bureaucrat. But I knew I was going to do this thing because the solution was so darn simple. It was so obvious to me that if we could find a way to bring the love of family to children who are institutionalized, we could transform everything. It just seemed absolutely clear, and nobody was doing it. So I had to do it. I never questioned that I had to do it. I did have one skill. I didn't know it at the time, but I was not going to be stopped by my lack of skills. I had one talent, one thing that has held, that has sort of kept me on a track from the beginning. I was a storyteller. I was a writer. I knew how to imagine a world that didn't exist. I knew how to dream of a happy ending. I didn't know more than anybody knows. I didn't know how to get from the beginning to the happy ending. But the thing that I had is the thing that all writers have, is they're not afraid of that. I mean, if you were afraid of not being able to get to the ending, you would never write anything, or you would never finish anything. So I was fearless. And I saw the world the way it should be. I knew I would get there. It would be, you know, there would be a few obstacles in the way. I had to go to China and convince the government and stuff like that, and raise money and all that. But none of that bothered me because I saw the world that I was going to create. And in a sense, for the last 16 years, we have been in production on this movie that will have an ending one day. We're a lot closer now than we were in 1999, the first time I sat across from a government official. It will have an ending. I know the ending. I've always known the ending. And we're right on track. I have no idea when we'll get there, but we will get there. I learned a couple of things in the course of these past 16 years and in the course of writing the book. I mean, because I'm not a very contemplative person. I'm sort of a trench fighter. I sort of just, you know, get down there in the dirt and do it. And writing the book has really forced me to think about what I've learned in the last 16 years. And one thing is crystal clear to me, and I learned it from the children. That's why the subtitle, How China's Orphans Taught Me How to Move Mountains, or what they taught me, that the most fundamental thing that is essential to all human beings is to love and be loved. And without that, children cannot thrive. Humans cannot thrive. Human children will never grow up to be caring, loving adults. And if there's like nothing else, that's the thing we must do. We must all work for that to make sure that every child knows love, knows she is loved, knows that her life matters. And it doesn't matter if it's our children or our neighbors' children or children in Afghanistan or children in China or children in Russia. There is no greater investment that we can make in the human race than ensuring that children are loved. The other thing that I've absolutely learned, just because I'm living proof, is that I am like an ordinary person. I had no qualifications, like I told you. I'm just, you know, I'm just as ordinary as you are, except for those of you out there who are extraordinary. I am like Joe Ordinary. But I did this thing because it was really, it was so upsetting to me that something so wrong was going on and the solution was so simple and obvious that I just felt compelled to do it. And so the other thing I want to say to you is that if there's something like that and you see a solution, you can fix it. You can do something. You might not be able to totally fix it, but I mean, I went to China and convinced the Chinese government to try something. So maybe you can totally fix it. Who knows? I mean, you know, whatever's bugging you probably isn't more difficult than that situation. So I just, you know, I think we get so used to hearing all this bad news. You know, we read all this stuff in the newspaper and we hear all this stuff on the news, and it just, it makes you feel so helpless and so terrible and like, what can I possibly do? And I have learned in these 16 years, there's a lot you can do. There's a lot you can do. I'm going to read a little bit from the book. To the children out there who I met earlier, this chapter, the part that I'm going to read is a little bit scary, and I just want to say to you that it talks about the way things used to be. They are still in some places, but fewer places. But I don't want you to feel bad about it, because I want you to know that we know how to make it better, and we've made it better in lots and lots of places. So I just don't want you to feel nervous. I want you to feel happy that things are changing, okay? So here goes. I entered a room full of orphans. It was the first time. There were maybe 20, maybe 30 of them, all little girls, toddlers, but no one was toddling. They were all sitting in little paint-chipped wooden potty chairs in a small dormitory. The children were tied to the chairs at their ankles and chests with strips of rag. There was a scratchy black and white television in one corner playing a soap opera. The sound was low. There was no other sound in the room. No cries, no little kid noises at all. A young Ai, which means auntie, but in this context caretaker or maid, in a wrinkled, once white uniform arrived. She was carrying a metal bowl of rice mush with bits of something brown. She was maybe 16. Ni hao, I said. She nodded with a shy smile, eyes averted, then grabbed a spoon and sat down on a small plastic stool before the little girls. She started scooping food into the first three little bird mouths, and the other children watched her, mouths open, waiting for their turn. Why are they tied? I asked Mrs. Lee. We don't have enough workers to control them, she said. Well, do they have any toys to play with or anything? Oh, yes. I murmured to Mrs. Zhang, where are they, the toys? Mrs. Zhang asked. She says they're locked up. Why? The children will break them, Mrs. Lee said. But, and then I shut up. I knelt beside a small girl who wore a red string tied tightly around her tiny wrist. It was digging into her skin. Ow, I whispered. I touched the string. She looked at me with pure terror. It's too tight, the string. Her mama gave it to her. She won't let us take it off. I stood up, shaky on my feet. I tried to touch each little rough cheek or hand before I left. Pathetic gesture. The next room was full of older girls, another 20 or so, maybe 3 to 12 years old. They were arranged around two large, bright-colored tables. The tables looked brand new, completely out of place in the otherwise dingy surroundings. A brand new, seemingly never-touched toy had been placed before each child, plastic puzzle discs and stuffed animals and toy military vehicles, some still in packaging. No one played. I don't think the children had ever seen toys before that day. They were a sad-looking lot. Unrepaired cleft lips and spastic limbs and bad haircuts on misshapen heads. Way too many bruises and scars for such a young crowd. Most of them were foggy-eyed, glazed, but a few watched us, especially me, the foreign freak, the first they'd ever seen. They were curious, and a couple were frightened when I came close. I took any emotion as a sign of life. One sweet-faced little girl, maybe 3 or 4 years old, sat alone against the wall in a towel-covered stool. She watched me, and when I approached, I thought I saw a tiny, fleeting smile. Hello, I said, crouching beside her. Ni hao, ma. I took her hand. Her skin was coarse, dry. She looked down at our fingers touching. She reached up and touched my yellow-brown hair. Why is she sitting here alone? I asked, trying to sound friendly and non-threatening. Can't she join the other children? She had a tumor removed from her brain. It was benign. She lost control of her bladder. But she's so young, can't she be helped? Can't she have a diaper? Nobody had an answer for me. Something was growing tight inside me. My eyes were stinging. Would you like to see the babies? Mrs. Lee took me by the arm, her grip firm. I wanted to shake her off. I wanted to run away from this place, but I didn't. Then there were the baby girls. Rows of them, in tight and squat wooden cribs. And these tiny creatures, stuffed two to a bed, they were tied to the railings. Where could they go? I walked up and down the rows, gazing at each. I tried to count them. I couldn't focus. I thought of who might have left them, each one a different story, each a tragedy that could not be spoken. I touched the pale forehead of a tiny child, maybe 2 months old, with spindly arms and doll-sized fists. I stroked her cheek with the back of my fingers. Her mouth didn't turn toward them. She'd forgotten every newborn's instinct to suckle. I picked her up and held her close. She weighed nothing. The makeshift diaper, a rag really, was tied to her that was tied to her waist sagged, soaking wet. I must have reacted. An Ai rushed up and snatched her away, then quickly grabbed dry rags to change her. To be honest, I can't remember the rest. I wasn't really there anymore. I remember in my throat. I remember the tightness inside me, the rush of anger pushing at my chest, the wanting to scoop them all into my arms and get them out of that place. But I can't remember the faces anymore. Or when I do, when I force myself to remember, those dear little sad faces are multiplied into thousands I've seen since, like an impossibly miserable hall of mirrors. So whenever I read that, I go back to that place. I mean, it's the saddest memory, and yet today I go to places that are like that. There are still places like that in China for all that half the sky has done, despite the fact that we work in 54 cities and partner with the Chinese government to train every child welfare worker in the country. There are still places like that. But today when I go into them, I don't feel that anger anymore. I don't feel that hopelessness anymore. I feel hopeful because we know how to fix it. We know how to fix it, and we're being allowed to fix it. And so now when I go to a place like that, I go make sure to go up to every single child, whether it's an infant or a teenager, with my horrible Chinese, it doesn't matter. I say to them, hang in there. We're coming. We can fix this. We know how. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. It's going to get better. I promise. And I can promise, because I know it's changing, and it's changed for tens of thousands of children, and it's going to change for them all. So that's a great feeling. And thank you, China, for making that happen, for allowing that to happen.
Stay tuned for more of this talk by Jenny Bowen. Her organization, Half the Sky, provides programs and training designed to offer loving, family-like care to Chinese orphans. Bowen spoke at Town Hall Seattle on April 1st, 2014. After this break, Jenny Bowen responds to questions from the town hall audience, including, how can Half the Sky's programs be brought closer to home? You're listening to Speakers Forum. I'm John O'Brien, KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
More from Jenny Bowen in a moment, 942 94.9 KUOW. Tomorrow evening, a program on the theme blame. Ever feel the urge to point the finger? New technologies are complicating age-old moral conundrums about accountability. Tomorrow night, stories about what blame does for us, why we need it, when it isn't enough, and what happens when we try to push past it with forgiveness and mercy. That's this week's edition of Radiolab, tomorrow evening at 7. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the 50s. Friday, highs around 70. Sunny in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Coming up in a few minutes, Tony Award-winning actress, singer, and recording artist Christine Ebersole talks with Michael Feinstein about her long career and presents some of her favorite tracks, including Two for the Road and Shall We Dance. Song Travels begins at 10 o'clock. Support for KUOW comes from the Community of Mindful Parenting, a website for information about classes like Listening Mothers and Reflective Parenting and other resources, all exploring a mindful and compassionate path to stress-free, happy, and resilient families. Information at communityofmindfulparenting.com. Support for KUOW comes from Alaska Airlines, with up to 270 nonstop flights from Seattle every day to more than 70 destinations across the country. Destinations like Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Honolulu. Learn more about nonstop service at alaskaair.com.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, this is Speakers Forum. This week's guest is social activist Jenny Bowen. She's the author of Wish You Happy Forever, an account of her personal journey to help China reform its child welfare system. Next up, Bowen answers questions from the audience at Town Hall Seattle.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Charles.
I've heard some anecdotal evidence. It seems like attitudes are shifting in China about abandonment. The one-child rule seems to be loosening up in areas. Domestic adoptions with Chinese families. What are you seeing in the course of time you've been there? Is that a change? I know the orphanage our daughter came from closed down, and the waits are getting longer. Are there less kids going to the orphanages?
Well, the population in the orphanages are changing, and that's because China is changing. I would not say that the total children is less than it used to be, but who's inside the orphanages is different than it used to be. There are a lot of reasons. One is because China is sort of moving into the first world. It's a more prosperous country. Not as many people feel compelled to give up children because of poverty. There is also some, certainly in the urban areas, the whole traditional preference for sons is fading away among educated populations. Interestingly, in the rural areas, that's changing too. And the reason that's changing is not because the traditional preferences are changing, but because you may have heard about the floating populations, the migrant workers that are leaving the farm to go to the big cities to work. And that's kind of changing life back on the farm. So you don't really need those strapping young men to work in the fields, but it's turning out that young women do really well in the factories. You know, they have fine motor skills, they're very patient, and they can actually, you know, bring home the bacon in the way that some of the guys can't, who are often relegated to doing construction work. So part of it's a practical thing, but also the other thing that's affected the population in general is because with all of these migrant workers going to the big cities and the whole urbanization movement that's happening in China, people leave their families, they go away, far away, and babies happen. And it doesn't really matter if they're boys or girls. You know, they cannot take care of these children. The other thing that has dramatically affected the orphanage populations are the rising medical costs. And because poor families, especially those who are migrant workers who don't have a residence permit in the big cities, if they have a child who's born with a birth defect or who needs medical care, they cannot afford to get care for the children. So sadly, they'll often feel like they have to give up their children in order to get them help. So there are a lot of reasons that are not pretty reasons. The government would like to say to you that domestic adoption of the healthy children has dramatically increased. I haven't seen that it's dramatically increased. I'd say it's increased. But China is, you know, like all Asian countries, there's still a reluctance. They're Confucian countries, and blood is really important. So that they are very often reluctant to adopt, to bring a child into their family that's not a blood relative. And still, in this modern day, when Chinese families, almost all, I've never heard of an exception. When Chinese families adopt a child, they will go far away from where they live and they will never tell the child. So there's still a stigma. It's probably changing a little bit in more educated urban populations, but nothing like what the government would claim. So that's kind of it. I mean, the numbers are about the same, but who's there is different, and that's why it takes a very long time to adopt a healthy child, baby, especially an infant from China. Anybody else? I think you need to come up here. I think that's the new thing. Oh, okay. Oh, yes, girls. Yes, please.
How can we help?
Is that both of your question, or
yes.
Did you want to add to that? Okay. You can help in lots of ways. I would say that right now, with the book, we have an opportunity to tell the world about these children. And, you know, Half the Sky has been working for a very long time to turn over what it's created to the Chinese people. And we're getting closer to that. You saw in the film, we've now established a Chinese foundation so that the Chinese people can begin to support child welfare in their country. It's really important that what we have built not be forgotten. We cannot ever turn it over if there's any chance the children will go back into the darkness. So getting the word out is the number one thing. So that's like buy the book, tell your friends, buy it for everybody you love. Just let the world know that these children are there and that they need us to care about them so that China will remember them. That's number one. Certainly always, you know, anybody who knows half the sky knows we're always asking for money. So financial support to help us train, to help us operate our programs, but even more than that, because as Chun Hui gets more and more established, I believe that China will be able to support the programs. But we will need to keep training caregivers and welfare administrators for a very long time. And it's incredibly difficult for us now to raise the funds to be able to do that. And the governments anywhere don't invest in programs. They don't like software. They like to build buildings. And as supportive as the Chinese government is, they're never going to pay for the training that must go on. It's not enough for us to go in and train a bunch of people and then walk away. We have to keep coming back and giving the guidance so that the children are going to be served for generations. So what kids can do, you can do fundraisers. You can, when you get to middle school or high school, you can start China Care Clubs. The China Care Clubs do a bunch of things. They fundraise to pay for medical care, for surgeries for children, orphan children in China who need life-saving surgeries. They also have play groups for younger children who are adopted from China. Some of them have mentoring groups for older children adopted from China. And those who are really active club members can apply to go to China in the summers, volunteer in our China care homes, medical care homes. And you don't have to be adopted from China to do any of these things. You just have to care about kids who don't have families. It's a wonderful club. It looks great on a college resume. So I recommend it to everybody. That's something really great that kids can do. And before you're old enough to have a China Care Club, you can certainly do car washes and bake sales and all those kind of things every single thing that you do, whether you give up your birthday money, as I know some of you have done, or whether you have a big event, every penny helps kids get the care that they need in China. So all kids can do that. Yes, somebody else?
You've been very successful in connecting with those people who want to do well by these children. Is there anything we can take away from that to our own country, where a lot of people overtly do not appear to want to do well by our vulnerable children? Is there anything we can do here?
Well, that's certainly been coming up a lot as we've been traveling across the country. What we have developed through Half the Sky, which is basically programs for children from infancy through adulthood, and a whole training package and a video resource library and an online learning community, all of these things that we have built can absolutely be translated to this country or to other countries. Children are children. Humans are humans. There are cultural differences that need to be, you know, addressed, but our needs are the same wherever we are. So absolutely, yes. It takes driven individuals who are just absolutely, you know, we now have the knowledge, we now have the materials, we now know what works for kids. We've seen it, we've now proven it over 15 years, we've watched kids grow into adults who've had the benefit of these programs. But it takes a bunch of people like me, you know, a bunch of unqualified, stubborn people who are going to get out there and make it happen wherever they need to see it happen. You got to need it. It's got to be us. We have to care enough to make a difference. But we can. We absolutely can. Here, anywhere. Anybody else?
I'm very thankful that you've written the book to tell your story, and that's terrific, but I didn't know about your film background before now, and I'm curious, if you're seeing things visually and seeing things in rectangles, why haven't you been doing a movie rather than a book? I'm just curious about that.
No. Nobody's asked me that before. That's interesting. There have been companies who have expressed interest in turning the book into a film, but I would never consider being involved. I think maybe just because I'm living the movie. I don't know. I don't have the distance. And even in writing the book, my first pass through was completely not about me. I almost didn't exist as a character in the book. I wanted to write about the kids. I wanted to write about the work. So when I was invited to write this memoir, I really wrote about the work. And it was the editor who came back to me and said, well, it's a lovely book, but where are you? And I said, well, I'm in there, but it's about the kids. And she said, well, nobody's going to care unless they see them through you. They have to care about you first. And I sort of grumbled and growled and said, because the publisher, HarperCollins, wanted to do a series of books about social entrepreneurs, about people who are not doing charitable things, but people who are trying to change systems. And my book is to be the second in this series that's supposed to be many, many. And I said to the publisher, you can't take all these people who are out there like trying to make big change and tell them they have to write about themselves. It's like the least interesting thing. What's interesting is the work. What's driving us? And he said, well, you're probably right. And then I went to, there's a thing called the Skoll World Forum. I won an award in 2008 called the Skoll Award for Social Entrepreneurship. And that's given to a very few people who are changing systems. A couple of years ago, I was there and I was grumbling to the woman who was the subject of the first book. And I was saying, these guys, I wrote this beautiful book and they just want me to talk about myself and I'm so not interested. And she said to me, they said the same thing to me. She works in Africa with women who she tries to empower women to sort of set their own destiny in all kinds of interesting ways. And she didn't want to write about it. She didn't want the book about herself either, and she really fought it. And then she said, and then I started to listen. And I realized when they talked to me that I had to own my story, that if I didn't own my story, no one would be interested in the story of these women. And she was so glad that she had, because she said, now people come up to me and they said, what happened to you in the book happened to me. And that by owning her past, she was able to make contact with people. So I came home and sort of grumbled and moaned some more, and then I completely rewrote the book. And I wrote my story from a very personal place. And now I'm really glad I did. I mean, I had written a memoir completely leaving myself out of it. And now I'm very glad that I've written something that's very personal, something I never would have written. And to tell you the truth, I just can't even imagine filming it. I wouldn't know how to begin because I'm in there. Okay, thank you everyone so much. Thank you.
You've been listening to author and activist Jenny Bowen. Her new book is Wish You Happy Forever, What China's Orphans Taught Me About Moving Mountains. Town Hall Seattle hosted this event in partnership with the Elliott Bay Book Company on April 1st, 2014. You'll hear an archive of Jenny Bowen's talk and many others at our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thanks for tuning in this week, and many thanks to outgoing producer Rachel Solomon for all her great work. Join us next week for a conversation with Barbara Ehrenreich. For Speakers Forum, I'm John O'Brien, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.